From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
President Donald Trump is going to be in Southern Illinois later today for a campaign rally. The president will appear at the airport in Murfreesboro around 4:30.
Hundreds of Illinois steelworkers and steelworkers all over the country are now back on the job, pouring 2.7 million tons of raw American steel into the spine of our country.
The rally was scheduled to help Southern Illinois Congressman Mike Bost, who's in a tough re-election fight, but Congressman Randy Hultgren from the western suburbs and Rodney Davis from central Illinois, who were also facing tough opponents, were on hand as well.
These two guys are warriors along with Mike.
Former Vice President Joe Biden makes two stops in Illinois today, one in suburban St. Charles, the other downstate, as he pushes for Democratic candidates running for Congress.
With Election Day less than a week away, several races are tightening, especially the one between Lauren Underwood and Randy Hultgren.
The Biden rally generated a big crowd in St. Charles today, often considered Republican territory. But with only days left, this 14th district contest has been labeled a toss-up.
If we stand for who we've always been, we will win on Tuesday, and we will take back this country, and a lot of Republicans will come back.
And with only a few days left until Election Day, candidates for Governor J.B. Pritzker and Bruce Rauner are giving their last push as they travel across the state. Familiar names are also helping candidates down the ballot in both parties, from current President Donald Trump to former Vice President Joe Biden. We'll talk about that and more this week on State Week. I'm Daisy Contreras. Sean Crawford is away. With me in studio on the campus of the University of Illinois Springfield are Charlie Wheeler, director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois and a longtime State House reporter and observer. Joining us also in studio is Brian Mackey, Illinois Public Radio State House reporter, and Rachel Odwell, reporter for NPR Illinois. Rachel, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
And finally, joining us by phone from Chicago is Mike Riopel. He's a reporter for the Chicago Tribune. Mike, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
So we'll start with a topic that we've touched upon many times here on the show. That's money. With only a few days left until Tuesday, Illinois continues to be a top state this year for reported contributions to candidates. Nearly 90% of contributions have come from three wealthy individuals, including the Democratic and Republican candidates for governor. Charlie, we'll start with you. Do you expect these numbers to grow in the next few days?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're still putting money into the campaigns, and I think we're on track to set the all-time record for the amount of money spent on a gubernatorial election, even when you adjust for inflation from the prior record. And there seems to be no let-up. And the money is not just going into the governor's race. There's just an unprecedented amount of money being spent for legislative seats, for Congress, particularly in some areas where there are close legislative races, they're in the multi-million dollars. 20 years ago, that was unheard of, that you would spend that kind of money in a contest to see who's going to be the representative from a particular legislative district.
Brian?
I'm with Charlie. I think that I was a little one of the last people to say that Pritzker had broken the individual fundraising record against Christine Meg Whitman from California in 2010, because you had to adjust those numbers for inflation. But with his last contribution, at least last contribution as of the time we're recording this show, which was the previous weekend, he definitely eclipsed her spending, even accounting for inflation. So lots of happy television executives across the country this year, particularly in Illinois, because of the amount of money that's being spent.
And as we heard at the top of the hour here, Republicans and Democrats are both battling to grab four congressional seats in the state. This brought President Donald Trump to Murfreesboro in southern Illinois last Saturday to rally for U.S. Representative Mike Bost, who was running against Democrat Brendan Kelly. Mike, you covered the rally on Saturday. Can you tell us what happened and who was there?
Well, Bost was there, and Rodney Davis from central Illinois was there. And the president came to an area of the state where he is very popular. Two of the races for Congress in Illinois that are competitive, or in the suburbs where he's not as popular. But in southern Illinois, he's very popular. In 2016, he won some of those counties with 75% of the vote or more. So he came to a place with a lot of current and former coal miners, the people who like the president, to give Mike Boss a last-minute boost, to give Ronnie Davis a last-minute boost. And it was surprising to see one of the congressmen from the far Chicago suburbs, Randy Holtgren, come down to be with the president. He said maybe two sentences from the podium, encouraged people to get out and vote about 300 miles from his district down in southern Illinois. So, you know, the Trump visit, he was making the rounds for candidates across the country, just like Vice President Biden is, just like former President Obama is on Sunday. These big names coming in, giving an indication that these races in Illinois are a big deal nationally when it comes to which party is going to control Congress next year.
And this was also a very interesting visit because for our current governor, Bruce Rauner. What happened there?
Yet in the run-up to the rally, it was unclear whether the governor was going to go, whether he wasn't going to go. He's kind of had a complicated relationship with the president over the course of his term. And in the end, he was there, but he wasn't on stage, and he says he left before the rally ended. He was back, you know, where you see behind the podium people lined up, so they're in the TV shot of the president speaking. He was behind in that crowd, but maybe had left before the president even took the microphone. So he did attend the rally, but he was not a star of the rally, then he left.
Now, anybody can weigh in on this. Is this any indication for Governor Rauner on how the election is going to turn out for him?
I mean, we'll find out next week, I guess. But I do think it's an indication of where he thinks his problems are, which is he is still trying to win the conservative voters that usually a Republican candidate will appeal to those voters in the primary and then try to go much broader, in at least in Illinois. I mean, we'll try to get the broader independent voters, maybe even conservative-minded Democrats, as opposed to still touring the areas of the state and emphasizing his campaign in places where that should, in, you know, other things being equal, that should be an easy spot for the governor to pick up votes. But as we know, because of the difficulty he had in the primary, because of the way a lot of conservatives feel that he misled them on issues like abortion, and signing legislation that expanded abortion access in Illinois, as well as legislation that added protection for immigrants. He has had a difficult time sort of shoring up conservative enthusiasm and getting people to vote for him.
And on the other hand, if he had gone up on stage and there was video and a photo of him, you know, embracing President Trump or whatever, then he would have had a problems in the areas of the state where the president isn't as popular.
Yeah, that's kind of the difficult situation in which the governor finds himself. On the one hand, down in southern Illinois, President Trump is very popular. But up in the suburbs in the Chicago area, the president is not quite so popular. And so if the governor cozies up to the president, it does him very well down south, but it could hurt him in the suburbs. And like it or lump it, there's a lot more votes in the Chicago region than there are in southern Illinois. And in fact, it struck me as unusual that at this stage in the campaign, you're going to be touring southern Illinois. In typical campaigns, at least in the past when I was covering them, and back in the day, the Chicago newspapers would assign reporters to the candidates for governor, the candidates for U.S. Senate, who would travel around with them, almost like with them day and night for the last couple of weeks. And in August, you would maybe take the tour around the state. But in the last week or so before an election, you'd be up in the Chicago area almost exclusively. So, as I say, I don't know what the governor's planning is or how this calculates into their scheme to get a majority of the votes, but it strikes me, based on past experience, that this almost might be counterproductive, not really going where the votes are.
And there are some who say that perhaps having third-party candidates in the mix will have some impact in this race. We have Conservative Party candidate Sam McCann and Libertarian candidate Cash Jackson. Rachel Otwill now joins us to talk about this very topic. Rachel, can either of these third-party candidates truly impact the race for governor?
Well, you hear the spoiler argument a lot about third candidates, and this year both the two candidates within the third party could potentially be getting votes from conservatives. Sam McCann, of course, being of the self-identified conservative party, is representing this divide within the GOP, which Jeannie Ives almost, you know, there was the upset that she was close to during the primary, which really surprised a lot of people, but she really focused on social conservative issues, and that's exactly what McCann is hoping to capitalize on. So not necessarily good news for Rauner. Cash Jackson as well is a libertarian who could potentially be, you know, the 15% of people in an NPR Illinois poll that was granted back from July and August was when they were talking to people. But 15% of people at that time said they would be voting for someone other than the Democratic and Republican nominees. And then another 27% either refused to answer or said they were still undecided. So there are those who will argue that, you know, the third party candidates will be making an impact on this race.
Yeah, and I think that speaks in part to how nasty this campaign has been. The governor has had a strategy of trying to, I mean, his personal popularity numbers are pretty low. He's one of the least popular governors in the country. And his strategy has been to drag the Democratic nominee, J.B. Pritzker, down there with him. Even before Pritzker was the nominee, he was running advertisements against him. There were the political stunts of, you know, people carrying toilets around Chicago, a plumbing van driving around Chicago, a fake plumbing van. And, you know, he has just spent most of his campaign focused on attacking Pritzker. And Pritzker has responded in kind as well with a relentless messaging strategy of Rauner failed me and, you know, the Trump Rauner agenda and all these sorts of things. So I think that, you know, to the extent that voters, I mean, it's quite, I was listening to somebody discussing the famous, or rather infamous Willie Horton ad from 1988. And one of the discussion points at the time was, ooh, will there be a backlash? You know, the one of the genius things of the strategy of that ad was how to get it into the national conversation without it having appeared to come from George H.W. Bush's campaign. And nowadays, that any sort of thought or concern about a backlash is just apparently out the window because negative advertising apparently works. I mean, that's people wouldn't do it if they didn't think it worked. So,
and bearing that in mind, just kind of the voter dissatisfaction that we're hearing about, a story I did for this week was kind of looking at, you know, if this isn't a time for third parties, then when might be? I spoke with Stephen Nemirovsky, who was counsel to Lee Daniels when he was Speaker of the House back in the mid-90s, in between Michael Madigan's reign, GOP House Speaker for a couple years there. And so he's evolved to the point where he is a third-party proponent. He has a show called None of the Above, but he was not content with either of the two candidates. He kind of said, you know, he thinks the Tea Party, for instance, made a mistake in becoming more of a movement versus a political party. He thinks there could have been power there. The Tea Party really came after the Green Party's success in Illinois. I also spoke with Rich Whitney, who is now running for Jackson County Board, and saying Greens are focused on the building blocks now. He did pull in 10% back in 2006, and he admitted that there were a lot of protest votes at that time coming largely from Republicans. But so, and that's kind of what Nemirovsky was saying to me, too, was that these third parties need to start small, throwing a candidate out for president or for a governor when people still aren't aware of what these parties really stand for might not be the best tactic.
And Rachel, I thought it was interesting in your story, Rich Whitney, who people might remember as running for governor in 2006 and doing well enough to get sort of established party status for the Green Party when Blagojevich and Topinka were both fairly unpopular candidates. he is running for a lower office now, isn't he?
Yeah, that's what so he's running for Jackson County Board. And yeah, I was talking about those protest votes when, you know, some within the Republican Party were upset with advertising against Judy Bartopinka, really, and obviously Blagojevich. But he said that he pulled more Republican votes, he thought. And he was aware those were protest votes. Come 2010, he got less than 3% of the overall.
Yeah, I think there were a lot of people who weren't ready to vote for a Republican, but on the other hand, couldn't stomach Rod Blagojevich.
Mm-hmm.
Although when the votes finally were counted, including the absentee ballots and the provisional ballots and everything, Blagojevich did not get a majority. He was, I forget the exact number, but he didn't get more than 50%.
Mm-hmm.
So at least most of the people in Illinois had better sense than to vote for him a second time.
And one race that seems to be very close, or at least much more closer than the gubernatorial race, is the race for attorney general. Democrat Kwame Raoul and Republican Erica Harold are the candidates in this race. Brian, this last week especially has been a tough week in terms of ads and mailers coming from these two campaigns. What's going on here?
Yeah, I think that this does speak to the fact that this is viewed as a much closer race than the governor's race, because you're seeing a late influx of money here to try to, on the one hand, Harold's message is, you know, I am the one thing that will be stopping the so-called Pritzker-Madigan agenda domination of state government. I can, you know, stand up for taxpayers. And on the other hand, you have the Raoul campaign out there saying that, you know, Harold is out of step with Illinois voters on issues like abortion and running some. And I guess it's not his camp. So some of this is from outside groups, outside money, at least, but running some very tough ads, accusing her of, for example, you know, not favoring the standard exception you hear. Well, you know, I'm opposed to abortion except for cases of rape or incest or something like that. And these ads are saying that she is opposed to even those exceptions.
And Mike, for your coverage of in politics here, what seems to be the reaction to these campaign mailers?
Well, I think one thing both these candidates have to do and are struggling to do is just get attention. I mean, there's so much happening in the political world between the president and then the governor's race here, and then in most of the state there are very hotly contested races for Congress. And I think what you're seeing is both of these candidates need to try to tell voters that there is a race for attorney general and that they're running for it. I think that's a big motivator, too.
Charlie, any input on or what you think historically with how, you know, nasty these campaigns have gotten? Have they increased over the years?
Yeah, I think the level of civility in campaigns has all but disappeared. And the attorney general's race is nastier than any I can remember for attorney general in the past. But on the other hand, it pales in comparison to the race for governor. So we don't have Erica Harold saying that Kwame Raoul is, you know, is corrupt and he's evil and he's the worst thing ever to happen to Illinois. And we don't have Kwame Raoul saying that Erica Harold is some failure in everything she's tried to do, that she's totally out of tune. Now, the issue of a woman's right to choose is a legitimate issue. Erica Harold points out that that is settled law, and she says she'll stick with what the settled law is. People who are pro-choice argue, well, the U.S. Supreme Court decision that made it settled law could be under fire. We now have apparently a majority of the U.S. Supreme Court that would be perfectly willing to overturn that decision and leave it up to the states. And in that case, if Illinois continues to allow a woman the right to choose, would Erica Harold staunchly defend that state law if it came under challenge from someone? So there's all these kinds of, I don't know, philosophical is not the right word, but public policy issues that need to get attention. The deafening noise of the governor's race, of the president trying very hard to people to focus on this caravan of woebegone immigrants that's 900 miles from the United States, but which poses this existential threat to our nation. It's hard to cut through all that clutter.
Yeah, I mean, and now, you know, another interesting aspect, too, is that early voting seems to be gaining popularity. More and more people are not waiting until Election Day to cast their votes. And we've been talking about the amount of money being poured into campaigns and the aggressive ads. So with early voting gaining so much popularity, Mike, will any last-minute campaigning really make a difference, do you think?
Well, it could make a difference. I mean, what we don't know as far as turnout goes is how will turnout, does all this early voting mean turnout will go up, or does all the early voting mean that people are just becoming more comfortable voting earlier than Election Day? And even if early voting spikes a significant amount like it has, there's still a ton of people who are going to vote on Election Day on Tuesday. So these campaigns that are going to be close, like the ones for Congress or even the ones for state legislature, getting your people to the polls on Tuesday still makes a big difference, even if a ton of people have already voted. If it's going to be a close race, you need to not take for granted every single vote you can get.
And I think the advantage for a campaign with the early voting is if you're doing your job the right way at the ground level, you already have a pretty good idea how most people are going to vote. You know who are your pluses, you know who would be your minuses. And so you want to make sure your pluses get to the polls. Now, to the extent that half of your pluses vote early, then on Election Day, you don't have to worry about them. You can spend your time focusing on getting the rest of your pluses to the poll. And when I say plus, I mean somebody that you know is going to vote for your candidate.
Yeah, and I think it's telling. This year I was talking to a Republican operative who says that this person and their spouse have only ever pulled Republican ballots, and yet they are still getting notices from Democrats, from the Pritzker campaign in particular, saying, hey, request your early ballot. You can request your vote by mail. And I think that speaks to how confident one, maybe how wide the reach is of the Democratic operation this year. Two, how confident they are that a lot of Republicans may not vote for Governor Rauner, that they're willing to even help people who are not definite pluses for them, as you've said it, Charlie, to just get to the polls, because maybe, you know, they'll vote for the Democrat this one time or go for one of those third party candidates.
So do we expect, looking ahead, I know that we don't really make predictions here, but do we expect that this will affect how candidates approach their campaigns and how early did they decide to start campaigning?
Well, I think the candidates have been doing this. Like, they, in previous campaigns, have been trying to get people to vote by mail, and I think they're just getting more sophisticated at it. And this year, a big change is that there's even more money to put into it than there has been in the past. Campaigns for Congress and governor definitely have done this before, trying to get people to vote early and vote by mail.
Things
keep ramping up.
I will say I got like five or six ballots had the header of the Secretary of State, Jesse White, paid for by supporters of J.B. Pritzker that were mail-in ballots. So I found that interesting, especially considering two of the people they were mailed to now live in New Zealand, and one was dead.
Well, that's a grand tradition in Illinois.
Did you mail them all back?
I mean, well, yeah, they all voted, of course. No, that's a joke. Yeah,
I think it's interesting how much they're tracking these things, too. I know a Democrat who got one of these prompts. Here's a form you can mail back to request your mail-in ballot. And they did that, and they got their mail-in ballot and then mailed it back. But just to be sure, the Democratic operation sent them a postcard that says, hey, we saw you requested your mail-in ballot. Be sure to actually remember to put it in the mail. So this is something where, you know, as Mike said, they've been building up this capacity for a while now, and they have gotten pretty sophisticated about keeping track and trying to just maximize the votes everywhere they can.
Unlike Rachel, in my case, I didn't get anything saying vote early. And I suppose it's because somebody could look at my voting record and see for the last, how long have I been in Springfield? Well, 40-some years, I voted every election at the polling place. I'm very old-fashioned. I actually get, I don't know if a thrill is the right word, But I actually feel good when I go there to the polling place, talk to the judges, get the ballot, mark the ballot, put it in the ballot box. It just gives me a good feeling that I don't think I would get if I voted earlier, if I voted by mail.
Yeah, I'm with you, Charlie. I like the feeling of going there and getting the little sticker and seeing I like seeing the little counter that ticks up by one digit when you actually put your ballot in the scanning machine.
Mm-hmm. And now time for our notes from the field. Charlie?
Well, we had talked about Governor Rauner making an appearance down at Murfreesboro at the rally, and Governor Rauner showed up. He actually rode his motorcycle. And he was there in the crowd. He was all decked out in his biker gear. And the governor is a very enthusiastic biker. Earlier, he had been endorsed for reelection by ABATE, which is the state motorcycle lobbying group. Despite the enthusiasm that the governor has for motorcycles, ABATE withdrew its endorsement of Governor Rauner after he signed an executive order to promote the testing of autonomous vehicles, driverless vehicles on Illinois roads. And the reasoning for ABATE is that they're concerned for the safety of motorcyclists, that if we do go into this testing mode that the governor is trying to initiate, it would be dangerous for motorcyclists. So they pulled the endorsement.
Mike?
Well, someone pointed out to me that the musical app Spotify, you put it on your phone, you can listen to music, was offering people unprompted a midterm election playlist. And apparently the songs are made up of songs that are uniquely popular in Illinois. People can take these to the polls and have their midterm election playlist. And I thought some of these song titles were notable. Among the titles were Rich and Sad, Broken, Speechless, Everybody Dies, and Creeping, among some others. But those ones seemed especially relevant to people who to watch these things on a regular basis.
Rachel?
Well, we hear a lot this year about women in politics. Anti-harassment panel has called for gender parity within state government. They think that's the way to, take care of the culture of harassment within state government. And right now, Illinois is one of the top 10 states when it comes to the makeup of its state legislature. It's 35% female right now. Overall in the country, 25% of state legislatures are comprised of women. But meanwhile, as our reporter Mary Hansen found out, efforts for gender parity don't necessarily mean that Illinois is seeing a surge of women this year. It's about the same as the last election as far as women nominees. But part of that might be because this work has already been kind of in the pipeline. But of course, we're just seeing in general a lot of talk about what will happen as far as women candidates who were really inspired after Trump's win.
And that will do it for this week's edition of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler, Rachel Otwell, Brian Mackey, and Mike Riopel of the Chicago Tribune. You can get a podcast of this show at nprillinois.org or on the NPR One app. Production assistance for today's program was provided by Brian Mackey. I'm Daisy Contreras.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.